This is for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Josh Saunders.
And this is For The Players, the pop culture's PlayStation podcast. With almost 40 years of playing PlayStation and 5+ years in the games media combined, thought we'd throw our hats into the ring and join that PlayStation conversation.
If you would also like to join the PlayStation conversation, you can do so every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. A little bit more conversation happens on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thepopculturist. Even more conversation happens on our Facebook community page, facebook.com/groups/thepopculturist. And the behind the scenes conversations happen on our Patreon page at patreon.com/thepopculturist. Jump over there, check out the tiers. There might be something there that interests you.
And if you want to contribute to the show, we've our newly designed form at at thepopculturist.com/questions. We have a big segment of the show here called From the Players, where we take your questions and we discuss them. And now we have an easier way to do it.
Now, don't be fooled by the URL for that. We do have a website, but the questions page is the only one you can access right now.
Yeah, thanks, Dylan.
Yeah, thanks, Dylan.
Wait on Dylan to finish his shit.
But thanks, Joel, for making it. I'm sure it looks great.
Oh, dude, it looks
great.
And
I'm sure people will really love it.
I have access to the back way, if you know what I mean. So I can see what it looks like now.
Yeah.
And it looks great.
I've been excited to get it out to the people for like 2 months now.
Yep, minimum.
Dylan.
Fuck you, Dylan.
Fuck you, Dylan.
Hey, man.
Hey.
Fuck Dylan, right?
Yeah, fuck Dylan. Hey, not like he listens to this anyway. I've played a lot of games this week.
You've been really good this week.
I've been all over the place with games. You know, it's normally I played
Persona.
This one game. Yeah. I played 5 games this week.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I don't know where I found the time for it. I got shit-faced by myself at home last night and then just played games.
That's my plan tonight, actually.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah,
I haven't bought a bottle of whiskey for like 2 months because I can't justify $30 just for some booze. But with the success of eBay and Magic the Gathering cards, I do have a little bit more spare cash, hence playing the many games and getting drunk.
What was your whiskey of choice?
Just Johnny Walker Red because it's cheap.
So like,
as long as I'm mixing it, I don't give a fuck what it is.
Okay.
If I wanted to...
sit there.
No. Or like fancy, like raging it over wash it with the whiskey glass.
You hear bubbles.
Yeah. No, it'd be, it's more, you know, you swirl it, give it a sniff, take a sip and go, get on the fucking point! Fanciness goes out the window. Fanciness goes out the window there. Well, speaking of Overwatch, my son decided to take the game home to his mum's on Wednesday. He paid for it with his pocket money. I can't complain.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, the day you got it, unfortunately, which kind of led me to not have anything else to play. So I kind of I expanded my reach a little bit. So first off, I tried Paladins, which is another class-based shooter in the same vein as Overwatch. Now, it has been called a lot as an Overwatch clone, which it's very similar in concept. But the thing is, it's a very small team that made the game. And for them to get to see Overwatch and make that game from scratch in a year, impossible. This game was in development before Overwatch was announced.
Yeah.
Okay, so... It's the same genre as Overwatch, a personality class-based team shooter. But it's the same as Call of Duty and Battlefield and Medal of Honor. They're all different games, but the same game. So a lot of people ragged on it for being an Overwatch clone. It's the same style as Overwatch, but it's not a clone. You know, that's not really a fair...
Is it as good?
No. It's free to play. And, you know, obviously it doesn't have the polish that Overwatch does. You know, Overwatch, Blizzard, with the billions of dollars they have, you know, the whole game is just... It's nice and bright and catchy. It's fluid. It looks great. It plays great. Whereas Paladins plays very much like you'd expect a small indie shooter game to play. You know, the graphics aren't anywhere near as good. A little bit clunkier. Doesn't feel as tight. But it's there. The system's there. I can see why people like it. What really throws me off in these games, though, is the menus. You know how, like, you open up a big budget game and you've got play, multiplayer, options. And, you know, that's it. Maybe Hero Gallery. Whereas the free-to-play games have, you know, here's the store, and this is on special, and get this at a reduced price, and buy some chests.
That's not just indie games. You go to Call of Duty.
The whole screen is cluttered with all these other options, and it's real messy to look
at. Yeah.
So I gave it a go for probably about 2 hours, but it doesn't scratch that Overwatch itch. So I jumped over and played some with Pyre coming out from Supergiant Games.
Yes, that came out last week.
Yeah, I loved Bastion.
Who for?
Yeah, I loved Bastion. I've had Transistor for ages but never really got into it, so I thought, oh, before I decide if I want to get Pyre, I'll get through Transistor. But it's just, it's not getting me. You? No, not hooking me. I don't know. It just, it's a very, very somber story in Transistor. But it's, maybe I'm just not in the mood for that at the moment. So then I finally bought Dying Light.
Hey!
And I've played more of it than you have.
Yeah.
That game's fucking scary.
That's my plan tonight. Plan tonight is to...
Yeah, well, if you can get through the prologue before I get home from tea, because you've got to finish the prologue, it's about an hour and a half, you've got to finish the prologue before you can start playing with other people.
Okay.
If you can get through that, then I'll get home and also get drunk and also play Dying Light with you. Game's scary. If you want to stream it, stream
streamers
it.
Be,
if you're streaming, can people still hear me?
It'll take a bit of a setup, but I can do it.
Okay. Yeah, game's scary, man.
Yeah.
Like, one of my things, I think I've said before, is being chased. I don't like being chased.
Entire game is being chased.
Even like, yeah, Crash Bandicoot with Boulder Run, you know, the anxiety would go up. Yeah. I suppose that's what it was meant to do. But yeah, Dying Light is being chased a lot. the parkour elements are really cool, really, really fluid. It took a bit of getting used to because R1 is jump. But once you kind of get over that mental hurdle, it does work. You can remap it if you want to, but the reason R1 is jump is because when you're parkouring, you need to be, you jump and you hold the button, and that lets the game know you want to grab whatever you're looking at. So using the right joystick to look around as you're jumping with X
you
just wouldn't, work. So that's why jump is on
R1,
and it does work once you kind of, you know, maybe 15 minutes, and then you kind of get your head around it. Parkour's really good. You know, you can pretty much climb. It hasn't been a single thing I've been like, oh, I need to get up there, and I'm just like, oh, I'll just get up there then. It works. Everything is so put together that there's always a path to where you need to be, but it's not like glowing red. Like, you can jump here and then you can go here and
so
then you go.
This is how you get to
here. It just works. If you want to climb up the side of the building, you can. If you want to go on the windowsills or go around, you know, it's all very good. And nighttime is really scary.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's no power throughout the city except your safe houses. So when it is nighttime, it's dark. You can't see 5 feet in front of you. It's that dark. But obviously turning your torch on lets all the hundreds of zombies within 10 meters of you know exactly where you are. So it's kind of...
And the worst thing is you'd go, turn on, you're like, okay, turn off. You're like, walk a little bit,
turn
off, zombie.
But at nighttime, of course, all the scarier zombies come out too. The ones that can climb, like that can follow you up buildings. The sprinting ones, the climbing sprinting ones.
They can climb too?
At night time, there are a certain zombie that can climb as well.
I was like, I'm just going to get high.
Yeah, well, during the day, that's fine. You kind of parkour over roofs to get to where you need to be. You've got firecrackers to distract them with and stuff like that. But at night time, there's nowhere safe. But it's early game, so I've only got, like, melee weapons. I don't have any guns or anything yet.
Thing.
Yeah, so you can kick things. That's funny. You, like, climb a building and the zombie on the balcony, just kick it. It just kind of falls and dies. And then I got into Gwent last night. So I've been itching for a trading card game. I gave her Hearthstone a massive bash when it came out. Put more money than I care to admit into buying card packs and stuff. And then recently, Craig and I have gotten back into Magic the Gathering.
Craig pops the intern?
Yeah, which is a lot of fun. And we've been trying to meet at Guff every Wednesday night to play some Magic. But as Craig can attest to, if something is going to come up for me where I have to go and do something immediately, it's always on a Wednesday afternoon. So unfortunately, I can't play it as consistently as I'd like to. Enter Gwent, which is surprisingly... When they announced it and when I did play The Witcher 3 and it was there, I put it to the side. Oh, whatever. It's just another fucking trading card game. Because Elder Scrolls have one now too. And
Actual Legends.
Yeah.
Just came to iOS.
Yeah.
Originals were only playable on iPads. And
And apparently their user base has doubled since it came to mobile.
Yeah, because so. We got the press release for it from Bethesda a while back when it came to iPad. And I'm like, oh, cool, and I have a little iPad mini, but it's like the first gen one. It's like, man, can't play it. I'm like, oh, fuck that game then. So I was like, well, and I tried it. I couldn't find it on my phone. And like, it's downloaded. It's ready to go.
Yeah.
But I just haven't done it yet. I'll take the lead.
I want to
see if we can
good.
Stream it somehow. Cause
it's good in the way...
Stream everything.
Yeah. It's good in the way that your decks are only 25 cards, whereas like Hearthstone, you got 40 card decks, yeah? Mm-hmm. And when it came to building your own decks, it makes it... The more cards your deck holds, the harder it is and the more quote, money you need to spend to get all the cards you need to make a good deck, yeah? Because there's only 25, it's not too hard to achieve making a deck out of cards you might not have, because you can craft cards and stuff like that. Yeah, it's just, it's really deep. The basis of the game is you play card, all cards have a power level, and it's like DC deck building. At the end of the game, whoever has the most, whichever team has the most power.
I did play the beta for a little bit.
Okay.
But because I was not that fresh at Witcher, I was like, I don't know what to do, and bailed.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, simple premise. Mm. It's a best two of three rounds. So it's more, it's got like, you need to have a poker face about it too, because you need to kind of, you decide if you want to throw the first round to have a better second round. And any time you can pass and go, I'm not playing any more cards this round, and your opponent can choose to keep playing, or they can pass as well. That's very much trying to
bluffs.
Get... bluffs. Trying to get your opponent to play a few more cards than you, so you have the card advantage going into the next round. And it's just really deep with strategy, and yeah, it's fucking awesome. I'm really enjoying it. I'm fucking enjoying it. Well, there's 10 minutes of what I've been playing. What have you been playing?
Not as much. First one is not a PlayStation game. It's finally played Splatoon 2.
Yes.
Fucking tight, man. It's a really good game.
I watched Jim Sterling talk about it, and he basically said if you were big on Splatoon 1, Splatoon 2 is not really going to do much for you. It's more of the same. But if you didn't play Splatoon 1, you should really fucking love
it. Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. I had full intentions of streaming it last night. Downside, the Switch dock, no Wi-Fi.
Oh, right.
So I went to Office Works, picked up a USB to Ethernet dongle. Fuck, it doesn't register in the thing. So I've got to return that. I'm just going to have to buy the Nintendo one.
Which is no doubt more expensive.
Oh, yeah. That's why I didn't buy it.
Yeah, right.
So I had full intentions of streaming Splatoon last night. I was like, cool, let's test this out.
Do you use motion controls or not?
Fuck no.
Well, from what I've been reading, a lot of people like actually the motion controls are better for this.
Look, I imagine if I played it for a little while and adapted to it, but like I just didn't want to die constantly when I first started. So I'm like, I've never played this game before. I need to learn the base systems, base mechanics before I even do anything.
Yeah. I can see why people say it, because, you know, kind of pointing, like, I want to shoot this person who's like right there. Whereas, you know, using a joystick, if you're not very good, you might, you know, I found with Overwatch a lot, I'm not precise with a joystick.
Yeah.
I'm not good at it.
I can see why they would do it, especially if you don't have a pro controller, because the thumbsticks on the Switch are very much slight improvements over, say, the Vita thumbsticks, right? They're not quality. They're good, but they're not the precise quality that you'd get out of a proper controller.
Yeah.
So you don't get that fine-tuned movement.
Yeah.
So I can see why they would do it to sort of counteract that fine movement. But if I could do it with the Joy-Con, like as when I'm playing it on the TV, that might be okay. I haven't really tried
that. I don't
know. I haven't actually played a dock. I would have played a dock yesterday. Fuck that Ethernet thing.
Is it nice playing a shooter where it doesn't involve blowing other people's fucking brains out?
Yeah, it's kind of cool. You just paint people.
It's a little bit refreshing.
Like the whole base of the game is to, it's the one I was playing, I played a lot of Turf War, which is all about covering the more map. So you can kill the others, but it doesn't advance the game. Like the whole point is to paint everything.
I guess killing another person would be beneficial in that that's one less person on their team that's not painting.
Yeah, and you get experience.
But I think
the turnaround's like 10 seconds or something.
But I think going out of your way to kill people is probably not the right way. If you just cross someone on the other team, it's like, you're fucked.
What I'm finding is happening is you have one guy who's like a heavy, and it's essentially like a big paint roller, and they're running across, and you're behind them, and you're protecting them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's normally what I would do.
Yeah.
But speaking of team-based shooters, though, finally jumped in Overwatch. after, you know, all these weeks, I pick it up, and you're like, yeah, I don't have any more.
No, well, I was speaking to my son last night, and it just seems like it's not going to be working at his mum's house, so...
Fuck you, Mum.
I'll have it back tomorrow, anyway, when he comes over for the few days.
So like I'm really enjoying it. It's so simple
in premise, yeah,
even in gameplay.
Yeah,
like as in it's so as in
it depends what
when
you
I
want
say
out
simple
of it.
As in it's incredibly approachable.
Oh god, yeah,
like there's no fucking around. It's like it feels like Team Fortress but better.
Yeah. Where the skill comes into Overwatch is not only obviously just, you know, aiming, but knowing the maps, knowing the flanking routes, knowing the other heroes' ultimates, knowing how to avoid those ultimates, how to pair your ultimates with whoever else is on your team.
Well, see, because right now I don't know a lot of the weaknesses and the strengths of each of the characters. Mm-hmm. I just play whichever ones I feel. Always we cough. We both cough for some reason.
Yeah, I know.
As we as I learn which ones I find best.
Yeah.
So my community member Max, him and I played for a couple of hours. We did a nice 8-round thing where we would just rotate characters, and mm-hmm. we each would just, you know, square off. Like we were both Hanzo or both Mei or.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Sounded fun. I actually came out pretty good. He won by one.
That's all right. Yeah, because
I was Hanzo, the guy with the bow and arrow.
Yeah, Hanzo.
He's jumping around like a dick. I'm like, boom. He's like, oomph. He's like, oh, man.
There is a 1v1 mode that you can, in the arcade, with all the other game modes. But there's 1v1 where you and one other person, I think it's best of five, and you get given, every round you get given a selection of random four characters, and they get four characters. So every round you get to choose from, you know, and you get a loot box every week if you win. So it's a real quick way to get a loot box, assuming you can win.
Yeah.
But I've only done that once, and I had heaps of fun. It went to I won, he won, and then I won the last round and decided. That was so much fun.
Yeah. Look, in terms of, like I said, it's very simple to play. It's very simple to learn, but the mastery will come in on those finer details.
Yeah.
Are they details that I think I'm going to invest my time in? I don't know. It depends on whether the rest of our little community jump on board.
I've played for about 50 hours and just in quick play. I was actually Wednesday night, I was ready to go, I'm going to give competitive a try. That's when my son, of course, took the game home. I was ready to jump into competitive mode. So I should thank him for actually taking the game away, because now I've played heaps of other stuff. And
finally play Dying Light together.
Yeah, and I found Gwent, and that's really cool too. But yeah, Overwatch is, simple to play. Each character has two or three different abilities in their ultimate. They all have cooldowns. Yeah, but the skill comes from knowing who's on the other team, knowing their abilities, knowing how to avoid their abilities, knowing how to avoid their ultimates, how to counter them, where to flank them. You know, all that kind of
stuff.
There
are some things that I have issues with.
Doomfist.
One, Doomfist. Hashtag fuck Doomfist. That character is poo.
I get fisted every game.
You just whoop, and then you're like, you're rocked out of a window and you're dead.
Yeah.
Stupid. Another thing is when you do die, you spawn about 8 kilometers away from the action. And none of the characters have a sprint button.
Soldier does.
Yeah, but that he has.
A lot of.
The only one. Look. Out of what, 15, 16 characters, one character has a slight sprint?
25.
That's even worse.
No, but here's a lot of characters do have movement abilities.
But they got cooldowns and stuff, so you can't cooldowns, actually.
Cooldowns, but only a couple seconds. But also, Symmetra, one of the characters, has her ultimate is to place a teleporter from your spawn room to wherever she places a teleporter to. So she's handy to have on the team as well. But yeah, the thing is, depending on the map you're playing, if you're playing like Escort the Payload, once the payload hits a checkpoint, you know, the attacking team spawns forward.
Yeah, the spawns adjust accordingly.
But there are maps where it takes so fucking long to get back into the action.
Yeah, and then you're like, we get to the point. I'm like, I'm running to the point, you
fuck. Trying. Yeah, I'd say at least half of the roster has some kind of movement ability. Like D.Va can charge, Reinhardt can charge, Mercy can fly to other teammates.
Yeah, and like Tracer's got the three
Tracer's
boosts.
Tracer's got her teleports.
You
know,
and then like you use all that by the time you get to the fight. And then you just... That's my biggest issue. Because an example, that really breaks the momentum for me. Mm. Like, I love getting in there jumping, because I'm surprisingly okay at this game. Like, I'm normally really bad at fucking shooters.
Yeah.
And the first round, I went 15 none.
Yeah.
And I was like...
Was I born to play?
Am I fucking on the internet? Is this the computer?
Am I watching a stream?
Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
But that's the thing, like what you're saying is, you know, how far back you spawn. That's what makes competitive so bad. So hardcore is if you get in a position where you die, you've really fucked up your team because you're not going to be back for about 30 seconds. And that's huge.
Yeah, but there are deaths that are unavoidable, and that's the worst part.
Doomfist punching up the anus.
Yeah, fuck Doomfist.
I've played enough around Doomfist that... On all the characters I enjoy playing, I can kind of avoid the. It's just the charge, just that charge that
the
one shots you. But I have been, I have found clever ways to kind of get around it, particularly standing near a cliff. And you just go, but then he can uppercut and then leap back on the. He's a fun character to play.
Oh yeah,
he's so fun to play.
Yeah,
but
once again, one on one with Max. Max is like, and he went shoot, and I was gone.
Yeah, if you're Doomfist and you come up to another Doomfist, they have to charge first.
Yeah.
They run up their charge, you do your uppercut into the sky, they charge under you, and then you just go, and fucking smash them.
My player of choice so far is Purple Chick with the Uzi, Sombra.
Sombra. Love nice, Sombra. She's one of mine too.
Yeah, only because one, she's fast, and Uzi, I'm like, meh, yeah. Someone's dead.
And hacking is awesome.
Yeah, hacking's fun.
Hacking also, her ultimate stops other ultimates.
Yeah.
So if she has her ultimate and you hear Soldier 76, I've got you in my sights.
High Noon.
Yeah, or you hear it's High Noon, you go, blah, and it shuts down their ultimate, and then they don't fucking have it.
Yeah. So I drift between Sombra, McCree.
Yep. Reaper, I'm not good with McCree. Genji. McCree needs too much accuracy for me. No, I'm not good with it.
But yeah, like the other ones, I thought, because I was like, this might just call this fucking for the Overwatch.
Yeah. It was Overwatch news after this. So
cool. Yeah. So like for me, I can't play a defensive character. I can't play. Like I don't have the attention span.
To play like a healer.
To play a healer. Oh,
okay, I love
playing. So I just like run around like a madman.
Yeah.
And like, granted, I'll work together for the point.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to stand there and hold a shield.
Yeah, okay.
Which I did. I tried to play Reinhardt once and stood there. And then someone came up to me and I went, and he went, and ducked past me because I was like,
yeah, it's really, really slow. Yeah. It's good with his ultimate because he knocks the whole team to the ground and he starts swinging.
No, I lie. I stopped using Genji.
Mm.
And I replaced it with Bastion.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that's fun. Like, because what I do is like, it's that I like having that support, like being that support on the point, on the payload. Sorry. Mm. So what we would do is there was a guy as Reinhardt and he'd block off the shield. And I'd sit behind him in the turret mode
and just fucking fuck massacre everyone. Yeah. Yeah. I love Bastion's ultimate where he goes do 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 do, but he does it in his Bastion whistle. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed. Yeah, if you listen to it next time you pop his ultimate, and it's that, but it's in his little robot whistle.
And it's a fucking tank.
Yeah, and he's a fucking tank.
Anyway, that's enough of what we've been playing this week, because apparently that went for like 20 minutes. That was awesome fun. This is where we get into the news.
Better than the 3 minutes it normally is.
That's true. This is where we inform the players of what we've been playing. Oh, wait, we've done that. Inform the players of what news that is coming out this week.
I'm just going to skip forward to the Overwatch news just while we're on that bandwagon. News topic number one, Overwatch's seasonal summer games will return Tuesday, August 8th to the 29th. Though not a major overhaul of last year's format, the Overwatch Summer Games 2017 will feature new skins, the return of the Summer Games 2016 skins,
return of the map,
and a new Sydney map for the Summer Games exclusive brawl, Lucio Ball.
Sweet.
Lucio Ball will return with an additional map, Sydney, and matches will rotate between this map and the old Rio Stadium map. Lucio's abilities have been teaked for the Lucio Ball, the ability to boop enemies has been removed, and his ultimate will now increase his speed and speed of his boop rather than pulling the ball towards the player. Overwatch Summer Games 2017 will also introduce a second competitive mode for Lucio Ball, which allows players to place and rank for some new Lucio skins as well. Lucio Ball's like Rocket League, but you're playing as Lucio.
That's the rollerblade guy.
He's a rollerblade guy with his L2 ability is to do a knockback. Like his gun go bloop, and it does a small knockback. So you're playing soccer with a massive ball as Lucio. Yeah, and then you're trying to boop the ball into the net.
Boop it.
That's what they call it. It's a boop. Good as Lucio on Doomfist. You hear him charge up, you kind of sidestep and go boop and just boop him off the cliff. So the skins from last year are back this year and they're reduced by, I think they said, 70% in terms of how much like gold they cost to buy those skins. So yeah, you can do that too. Summer games will be fun. I didn't play it last year, obviously. Yeah. It'll be fun. I
was really confused. I saw the promo picture and it was like, Lucio Ball in Sydney. I'm like, is that the Rocket League ball? Like,
yeah, the map looks like a Rocket League map.
Mm.
And the ball
it's
looks
just misleading.
Like
I'm like, hey, is it Sydney Arena? I'm like, that's not Sydney. That's a Rocket League ball.
Overwatch. We love it.
Done. Next.
Number two, let's get off talking about Overwatch. Kojima Productions has showcased an early look at the advanced lighting and fog system that's being developed for Death Stranding.
Sweet.
During a tech presentation at SIGGRAPH, the graphics demo was revealed for the game, which is being built on Guerrilla Games' Decima engine, the same engine that powers Horizon Zero Dawn. During the presentation, Kojima Productions graphics programmer Kohei Ishiyama discussed the height fog model, which was custom created by the studio for the Decima engine, for an atmospheric scattering system that is specifically optimized for rendering photorealistic lighting. You haven't seen this clip, have you?
No.
Fucking magical.
Is it an actual clip?
Yeah. It's just a still shot of like a bridge and some buildings behind it, kind of from the camera looking up into the sky. And I guess it just runs through the day to night cycle.
Yeah.
And then also has some fog rolling as well. Fucking awesome.
Mm. It's good to see some gameplay, but it's not gameplay. It's just
not gameplay.
The engine.
It's just showing here's what the game's going to look like, and here's what we can do with the engine in terms of lighting.
Is Kojima just doing the tease?
Yeah, he's
just doing
more
of the tease.
It's only like 10 seconds because it's kind of fast forwarding through. Looks awesome though.
Yeah,
it's good. It's good to see that all the things are fitting into place for the real production to begin. Who knows when we get it?
I'm keen as shit. As we discussed before, Death Stranding. I'm ready when it's ready.
Yeah, same.
But I kind of want to see it. Can we just skip to this next bit? This next one. That's kind of.
You
don't care? Just to say it quickly.
Friday 13th is getting its physical edition on PS4 and Xbox One on the 13th of October. Friday the 13th of October. There you go.
Because I know you want to talk. I know you want to talk about this one.
I do. Persona
news.
Everybody
gone for like fucking ages.
Atlus has announced 3 new Persona spin-offs, including 2 dancing rhythm games for PS4 and PS Vita, as well as following up to Persona Q for Nintendo 3DS. The 2 rhythm games titled Persona 3 Dancing Moonlight and Persona 5 Dancing Star Night, fucking shit names, will be released in Japan in 2018. Atlus has launched a teaser site for both of them and trailers for each of them as well. At this stage, Atlus has yet to confirm a Western release for these titles. Persona 4 Dancing All Night did see an English release, as did Persona Q Shadow of the Labyrinth, so it's pretty much guaranteed at this point. A little bit more Persona news. Persona 5 will be adapted into an anime using the voice cast of the original video game. Atlus and Gematsu announced the show will be called Persona 5, the animation. The series will premiere in 2018. A teaser trailer for it is also out. Persona 5, the animation, will be produced by Atlus in conjunction with A1 Pictures. No word yet on whether Persona 5 animation will be localized for Western audiences, but Persona 4 was in the end anyway, so I think it's a pretty safe bet.
Fuck yeah.
Persona 5 in the West, I'd argue, is more popular than Persona 4 at this current stage.
Yeah.
Persona 4 gave the reach, and Persona 5 capitalized on it, I think.
Yeah. It's very interesting seeing that Persona 3 is getting a dancing game. Thing is, that game is old.
It's old. It was on PS2, and then it had a port to PSP. But Persona, the franchise, is new to the West, but it's so fucking big in Japan. And
yeah,
it has been since Persona 1. So whether Persona 3... If anything, they'll definitely localize Persona 5 dancing.
Yeah.
They may not do Persona 3 because Persona 3 doesn't have a big Western audience.
But maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it needs. Maybe it's a testing the water, and then if that goes well, then they'll bring,
Well, because the original Persona Q Shadow of the Labyrinth on 3DS had Persona 3 characters in it too.
Yeah.
And that was obviously localized for Western as well. So it'll be interesting. But if anything, those games in English are very, very... long time away.
What interests me though is I quite like rhythm games. When I say I like rhythm games, I like Rock Band
and Guitar Hero.
Other rhythm games, not so much.
Where's your version? Where's your copy of Parappa the Rapper?
I tried to play the demo and it's laggy and poo, and I didn't feel it. I don't think even I. It seems crazy Japanese.
Oh, it is. It's totally Japanese.
As in, like, I don't know how that will go over here. Like, I know
Persona 4 Dancing All Night was localized.
Yeah,
and it was very popular.
And I assume it did well within Persona 5 market.
Within the niche market at the time, it definitely did.
Credit to Persona 5. Persona 5 has been able to reach outside of what the usual Persona market is.
Yeah, it took.
But I don't think their dancing game will do that.
No. If anything, their fighting game might do more. Persona 5 Arena. Persona 4 Arena, which was really cool. You kind of like fist fighting, but then you do combos, but you summon personas behind you to do the combo, and they disappear. That's really cool. It'll be interesting.
What about you as the Persona man? Would you, when they do get localized?
I definitely want them to, but I haven't played Persona 4 Dancing All Night because it's still like $45 and I don't want to spend that. However, I have gotten all the music from Persona 4 Dancing All Night because they take all the tunes and give them a little bit more of a... Yeah, and they're fucking rad. Persona 4 had a great soundtrack as it is, and they enhanced that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Persona 5 has some wicked tracks that I dance to anyway. So that's awesome. I'll quick fire this one too. Ark physical edition has been delayed until the 29th of August. The DLC that was meant to be released at the same time, Ragnarok DLC, will also release on the 29th of August. The delay is set to make the DLC even bigger than what was originally promised, including increasing the overground by approximately 25% and adding more items.
Well, the biggest issue with this is this news broke to us probably a weekish ago, thanks to Jess, one of our community members. She somehow saw it and was like, hey, the problem that issue was certification. Short answer was, they thought the certification process was nice and quick because they're used to PC, right? It's like, hey, it's cool, and it's loaded up the next day.
Yeah.
Or probably within like an hour. Mm. With game cert, it's like 3-4 weeks out.
Yeah.
So they're like, hey, we submitted it. We didn't realize cert was going to take so long, so it's the end of the month. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
So the studio Wildcard has assured fans that the game definitely has gone gold. So
it has gone gold.
Don't worry about it. So they're just capitalizing on a little bit more time while they have to wait.
Yeah, while they wait for that month in cert, they're just fucking around with it.
Yeah, so you know, if you're going to get it, just wait a little bit longer. You probably already, I think anyone that's interested in it has already bought into early access anyway. So I'm not sure the I don't know if the full release will get many numbers, because I think anyone that wanted to play it has probably already paid for it.
I'm interested. We've reached out to the PR team because I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. EA.
I can't play it on PC. I only play it on console.
Yeah, I'm not. PC thing either. EA has officially confirmed it's merged BioWare Montreal and Motive Studios. In a quote, the teams in EA Worldwide Studios are packed with talent, and more than ever, we're driving collaboration between two studios on key projects, EA told IGN in a statement. Continuing, with multiple major projects in development in Montreal, we are merging BioWare Montreal with Motive Studios. This is an ongoing process, but there are many exciting roles and opportunities for everyone on the team.
Jerk.
The merge comes after a report that the Mass Effect series was to be put on hold after the underwhelming release of Mass Effect Andromeda, and the studio would instead be focusing on BioWare's other titles. And in another quote, BioWare continues its work on new titles, including the highly anticipated game Anthem. EA's statement continued, what's coming next for BioWare is very exciting, and we're thrilled to have Casey Hudson returning for the lead.
Something we discussed the other week.
EA Motive, headed by ex-Ubisoft executive Jade Raymond, is currently working on Star Wars Battlefront 2 and other unannounced projects. This seems strange to me, like merging two studios together. They didn't even give... I don't know what they mean by merge, because you'd think merging, they'd put the two studios either under one banner or make a new banner for both studios. Mm. So they mean they've just moved them all into the same building, maybe? Like, it's really kind of actually vague, I think, in what they're doing.
I think what it is, now, this is entirely hyperbolic, by the way.
Pretty much everything we say on this show is hyperbolic.
Yeah, it's true. So... it's funny how all these things are happening after Mass Effect Andromeda. Now, do I think Mass Effect Andromeda is causing most of these? I'm sure it's playing a role.
Yes.
So, do I think they're merging the studios purely as a response to Mass Effect Andromeda? Maybe. Mm. I would think potentially to... because anyone that cares about BioShock, about Mass Effect... sees when they hear BioWare Montreal, they're like, oh, those guys have fucked it up.
It
could just be a... because I for the life of me, I can't think of what Motive have done. Motive doing Battlefront 2.
They're doing Battlefront 2.
Yeah, that's right. Because I was like, oh, what have they done? It's something cool.
Yeah.
That's a cool name. It's like, you know, like having behind the name of Battlefront 2, they're like, you know, I mean, they can... swivel them as part of Motive technically, and it's got that good name behind it. I think it might be just a working
of the Motive names. Do Battlefront 1 though?
Yeah, I think so.
Because Battlefront 1 doesn't exactly have a good name behind it either.
It's not as bad as
Andromeda.
Well, so like, see, look, that's the very cynical look at it.
Yeah,
I think it's. I think it come. But what's more realistic is BioWare Montreal was set up to do Andromeda, to do Andromeda's DLC and any planned future content. With BioShock under kind of put under the rug, with all those DLC canned at this point, this studio needs to do something.
Yeah, true.
Rather than lay them all off, which happens a lot in this industry.
Oh, yeah.
Move him to something more productive.
Yeah. Well, let's continue.
That's the positive version.
Yeah. Let's continue with BioWare news, a little bit sadder here. Corey Gasper, designer of the Mass Effect trilogy and the most recently Anthem, has passed away. BioWare released an official statement on its website, which says, in quote, "It is with great sadness that we announce the passing of our friend and colleague Corey Gasper. He was a member of our team for over 9 years and worked as a designer on many of our titles, including Sonic Chronicles, Dragon Age Origins, Mass Effect 2 and 3, and most recently Anthem. Corey was a talented designer and even better person. We offer our condolences to Corey's family and everyone that knew him. We will miss you." He was working as the lead designer on Anthem before he passed away. That's sad.
That's very sad.
They haven't really... I couldn't find what exactly happened, you know, what caused his passing. So I might just leave it at that. I don't think I'll dig any deeper into that. If it's not announced, then it's probably not for us to know.
Yeah.
But it's sad, and it'll be interesting to see how that if and how that affects Anthem's development, seeing as he was the lead designer. I don't imagine it, other than, of course, team morale. But in terms of progress on the game, I don't think that'll be hindered too much.
Mm. Yeah, but in the positive note, it would be nice to see, you know, when you boot up.
I guarantee you there'll be a tribute. I guarantee there'll be a fucking statue in the game somewhere with a memorial plaque or something. There'll be something.
Very beautiful.
He had a good line of work behind him with, you know, Dragon Age and Mass Effect, and, you know, so, and he did seem kind of young as well.
Look, to be honest, I don't know who he is.
No, I didn't either. But
for me, it was more, this story is more of a fuck. Yeah. And then to sort of see people like the industry come out and support, you know, for the team of BioWare and his family.
Yeah.
So that is why I think it's important for us to mention. It's just sort of the power of that game's, not the game's media, the game's industry in terms of the creators.
Because it is seen a lot in the games industry. It is, you know, everyone's in it for themselves.
Yeah.
From a casual perspective, you know, this studio hates that studio and the studios don't talk to each other. That's not true at all.
And to sort of see other studio, you know, other studios, other
reaching out, doing their own tributes,
strong influence. Yeah, it's really quite nice.
Yeah. Moving on, Paranormal Activity: The Lost Soul will arrive on August 15 on PSVR.
Yeah, because it's not going to like make me pin myself.
Yeah, already available on Steam Early Access. The Paranormal Activity VR game is based on the movie franchise's mythology. That said, The Lost Soul doesn't focus on any particular installment. The VR game places players in an average home set in the woods, and unsurprisingly, there's something scary lurking there. Developer VRWorks is promising support for Paranormal Activity: The Last Soul after release, saying updates are in the works for the horror game. Horror VR. Let's do it. That's a stream horror, if I've ever seen one.
Horror is by far the best genre for VR.
Oh, yeah.
Especially for reactions anyway. Mm. My concern is, at least with the first Paranormal Activity, the scares in that are really good.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's real world scares.
Paranormal Activity 1 was and is one of the best horror movies ever released.
Yeah. So be able to bring that spook from if they're using the first, not the fucking Shattered Dimensions or whatever it was, when like the wall opens and there's a truck in, like that instantly you lose all the cool.
See, Paranormal Activity is one of those franchises that had a great release in the first one and thought, let's capitalize on that then.
Same as Saw, as an example.
Exactly the same thing. Well, they could have left Paranormal Activity 1 at it. But then they tried to bring this big overarching story,
you
know, linking all these things together, and it just didn't work. But the scares in it they were mind scares. They fucked with you in your head.
Shaped in the real world, as in they weren't.
It's just a couple.
It wasn't
bedroom.
A demon. It wasn't a guy. Found footage look to it, the kind of Blair Witchiness.
But see, even, you know, when you see her like get out of bed and go down the stairs because her husband's not in the bed, and then just you can't see anything, but you hear her screaming like, what is this, or where are you, oh my god,
the door shutting,
all that, but you're not seeing, you know, and simple. All it is there's a door shutting and a chick yelling, but it's so scary. So hopefully they can transfer that kind of a thrill into the game. That'd be really cool. And it's a stream if I've ever heard of one.
We do want to stream some more VR.
Oh yeah. It's just a bitch to set
it's
up.
Just it's a shit to set up in here. But when we have, now that we have the green screen and stuff, it should be doable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we may as well use it for something.
Yeah.
This news I put in just for you, Ryan. A blog post on the official Stardew Valley site has announced details about its upcoming multiplayer mode, while also revealing the feature won't be coming out until early 18, which is actually only about 6 months away anyway. So, the post reveals that multiplayer will be played through the player's ability to build up to 3 cabins on their farms for farmhands, which will be controlled by other players. Farmhands can do almost anything the main player can do, the post explains. The post didn't burp, that was me. They can farm, mine, fight, fish, forage, marry NPCs, and take part in festivals. However, certain decisions like when to sleep and when to start or end a festival can only be made by the main player. That's funny. It's like, can I go to sleep? No!
No.
Get plowing them fields, boy. Okay, it's so tired. Players will even be able to marry each other, although the specifics of how that will play out are still being worked out. Player-to-player marriage will not use the mermaid pendant, though. I think that's what you needed in the game now to marry an NPC. Multiplayer won't require players to set up or run a server, allowing you to simply invite friends to your game through Steam or similar methods on consoles. Multiplayer will instead only be online with no plans for local multiplayer or split screen at this time. Which is fine. I don't think it's not a split screen multiplayer kind of game.
Yeah, that's fine. Buddy Watson, community member and host of Review Culture, a really cool little podcast. He's already proposed to me, and we're going to get sweet Stardew Valley married. We're going to farm that like a motherfucker, you know.
Going to farm each other's genitals.
Yeah, we're going to be the best same-sex farming couple we've ever seen.
You could say you're going to spend the day plowing the field.
Yeah, and then we'll fuck each other.
And then you'll fuck. Yeah, like a lot of people are a bit meh on why it doesn't have a split screen, but it's not that.
Just grazed the shit out of my finger.
It's not that kind of game. Your farm is very much your farm. Yeah, and you need to be really picky about who's coming in to play with you. You don't want to like a troll coming to fuck it all up or whatever.
Yeah,
it is one of the games where I think I bought it before you did actually, and I put in probably 2 or 3 nights of playing casually, but I never got balls deep in it.
Oh, I loved
but
it.
But now that I might have you to go balls deep in, I might pick it back up. At some
Dude,
point.
Yeah, I think if my multiplayer does kick in, if you and I just jump in a new game, and we build a farm together.
Yeah,
like that
it's like
might
a separate file or something. Yeah.
And of course, stream it.
And of course, stream it. Yeah. The top selling games for the week ending 30th of July have been announced, starting from number 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, I did get all 10. Starting at number 10, Battlefield 1. Number 9, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. Number 8, Rainbow Six Siege. Number 7, Ghost Recon Wildlands. Number 6, Horizon Zero Dawn. Number 5, GTA 5. Number 4, COD Bops 3 is what I wrote. Call of Duty Black Ops 3. Number 3, Prey. Number 2, Crash Insane Trilogy. And number 1, a sports game, back to prominence after a little while out of the things. What a fake out! Rugby Live, Rugby League Live 4, not AFL Evolution, sorry. That's weird, man.
Okay. You know what this really showed to me, if anything? It made me really consider what the numbers are of PlayStation sold games in Australia.
I sold like 10 copies.
What's I'm thinking? It's like, because for some reason I would assume that like thousands of games get sold a week, right? Yeah. Like I understand with Crash, it would have been probably in the hundreds of thousands of games. Or at least the tens of thousands. Yeah. I would probably say like 50,000 units in the first like...
Your number just keeps getting lower and lower.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's probably in the tens of thousands, right?
Yeah.
As in terms of what Crash would have sold. Mm. And then with Rugby League Live, I'm like, well, that's got to be in the single thousands.
I don't know. See, I'd expect to see a new FIFA up there. I'd expect to see a new NBA up there. But rugby... really just struck me as
that's what I'm
as
saying. Like, okay, well, like, what if it sold like, very conservative here. Like, it sold like 4,000 units, maybe. Why not? Then what did the rest sell? Like, to be in 10th place, you would sell like 108 copies.
So GTA 5 isn't the gangbuster we thought.
Yeah,
it was.
Everyone's like, wow, who's still buying this? Yeah. 20 people.
Well, just on GTA 5, apparently it last month was GTA 5's most profitable month ever.
I have been meaning to like when I first got GTA 5 on PS3, it was awesome. The online is so good, and I've got some really incredibly strong and happy memories from GTA Online, and I would love to play it again.
I have no interest in it, unfortunately. It just doesn't do it for me. I did have it on PS3, and I did play online for a while, but it's not something I really want to go back
to. You have a group of people. You can't play by yourself.
No, but I did have a group of people back then, people I worked at Dan Murphy's with. What year did GTA 5 come out? 2014? No, earlier than that. 2013,
12? 13.
The fact that 4 or 5 years after release, last month was its most profitable month.
Yeah.
That's insane. That is just freaking insanity. Awesome. That's it for the news. Well, we have one more story, but that's going to lead into the main topic. So.
Main topic, still don't have a name for it.
Yeah. We're never going to have a name for it. Ever. So the main topic for the show, I want to talk about DLC because...
I don't adjust my belt because I'm fat.
...of what I would consider a hypocritical quote from Activision regarding Destiny 2. The quote is, there's a bit of a story... Activision had one of their phone conference call
things
looking forward in another one. They talked about the importance of DLC and the quote...
Investor call.
Yeah. The quote I want to talk about is, quote, finally, and maybe most importantly with a game like this, Destiny is so engaging that the follow-on content, meaning DLC, is almost as important, if not as important, as the main game, Hirschberg said. So, let's just get this out there. The base game of Destiny 1 was hot fucking trash.
Oh, vanilla.
Vanilla Destiny is poops. Was now,
poops.
Now, obviously they learned from all that and they fixed it with the Taken King and
it took them a while.
Took them a long time. Probably, I think, 2 years before Taken King came out, which Taken King did improve on the game a lot and it did make it more engaging and more engrossing and had a bit more weight to the story and all that kind of stuff. But I don't like the mindset they seem to have going into Destiny 2, where it's let's get the game out and then we'll expand on it later. Let's expand on it later, but not the DLC is more important in the way that it will fix the things we don't have right in the base game. Because that was their approach with Destiny. They couldn't have seen it coming, obviously. You know, they just couldn't keep up with Destiny 1 in content in the beginning. That's why they pulled in other studios to help get out the DLC content. Because there was the urgency of, like, people are leaving the game because there's nothing to fucking do. And it's boring. And it seemed, I would have hoped they learnt from all of that. And I'm sure Destiny 2 will be good, but I hope they're trying to make it fucking amazing and not banking on, well, we can just put out DLC now to cover that up. You know what I mean? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I do. Destiny's a tough example. When they first pitched Destiny of what it is and what it's going to become, it had full grand story adventures, all this sort of shit, right? And then with Activision, part of that shit got removed. So it launched, vanilla Destiny launched poorly. Well, not poorly. It launched with an under.
Well, it launched well.
What's the word I'm looking for?
It was just a lack of content.
Underperforming story.
Underwhelming.
Underwhelming. That's what. Thank you. The underwhelming story, not simply because they were trying to charge it with DLC, just because of the way they had to sort of not rush to get it out.
The Grimoire cards.
There is a lot of issues. Like if you ever got some interest, there's a YouTube channel called Downward Thrust. It has this really cool video about the history of Destiny and why it came out so poo.
Mm.
Now, on top of that, they do with that $10 million deal with Activision, as in it's a 10-year, I think it was a 10-year deal, $10 million was either one of the two, 10 years. And part of that deal was they have to release, part of the agreement was you have to release X amount of DLC. Mm. So having them say that in that investor call, we knew it. Because it's part of their agreement with Bungie,
yes,
for Destiny.
Yeah.
In terms of the way they worded it, and like, we'll just fix, you know, we're twisting what they've said, but you know, by them saying we'll just fix shit, I strongly disagree with that.
It was
insanely,
the add-on content is as important, if not more important, and
because
Destiny 1 showed them. Destiny 1, while they were at the panic stations for a while, it showed them we can release this and still get this result later through DLC.
Yes and no. I think his statement comes from the business side, obviously. So yeah, the release of the standard game is incredibly important.
Mm.
With the way the games industry is changing, rather than single releases, it's becoming to games as a service. They don't want you to buy a game, play it, and then buy another game. They want you to play this one game for 5 years.
Mm.
And the only way they can do that is by constantly, you know, releasing content for it. So in terms of, the guy's not wrong, DLC is incredibly important.
Yeah.
Because it may be more important because people might play it initially, but if you want that games as a service, you need, like, it is more important to keep them hooked.
Yeah.
From a business perspective. From a player's perspective, fuck you. Give me a good first game.
I understand that behind the scenes, you know, you're not just making the game, but you're also thinking about ahead into
now you have
what
to.
Will be DLC. But I hate hearing about DLC before the game's even out. I know that's in the discussions. I understand that DLC is probably thought of way early back in development. Okay, well, this is a base game, and then our first DLC will be this. Mm. Or we can't fit this into the base game in the time frame we've got, so we'll make it the first DLC. I get it. I hate hearing about DLC. It's like when, I think it was Far Cry 4 was announced. You had the trailer, and then you had like the preview image at the end, like, you know, and it was just pre-order now and get this DLC and that DLC and that DLC. It's like, motherfucker, the game's not even out yet.
Mm.
Just,
I remember Far Cry 5.
It was one of the Far Cry games. Far Cry 5's not out.
Yeah, no, okay. Well, 5 did the same thing.
I'm sure it was 4.
5 did the same thing. It's like pre-order, blit, and get DLC. And I'm like,
yeah.
Could be wrong. High likelihood I'm wrong.
See, in terms of like DLC done right, now I can't attest to this as in I've played it, but just from the buzz around the industry, The Witcher 3.
Oh man, The Witcher 3 DLCs, they are literally whole new.
Yeah, games. Apparently like 20, 30 hours.
Fuck, yeah. Like the DLC, like you said, they are proper DLCs. Mm. And that's the bit, like...
But the
actually, I wouldn't call them DLC. I would call them the old school expansions.
Yeah.
In the same way that like Oblivion had the Shivering Isles and the Knights of the Nine. You know what I mean? Like they have these things that just build the world.
See, that's what I miss. I miss the term expansion. Mm. It's all moved to DLC now. Same as like back in the day, Diablo 2. Diablo 2 launched as hot rubbish. It was not a good game. But when Lord of Destruction came out, the first or the only expansion pack for it, that's when it became that revolutionary kind of thing. I love the term expansion. It has a different vibe around it. Because the wording of DLC has been run into the ground at this point.
Yeah, well, thanks to, you know, microtransactions and shitty cosmetic garbage, the term DLC has been obliterated. It doesn't mean what it's like. Yeah. If someone tells me it's like, I have a reason to believe Witcher, they are called expansions. Mm-hmm. I think it's called, the Blood... Blood and Wine expansion. Yeah.
Yeah. And Heart of...
Stone.
Stone?
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I think it's Heart of Stone. And it's like, you know, this... they are full-blown expansions.
Yeah.
Now, there are other things... One of the other examples I can think of is Arkham Knight, right? That DLC wasn't all that good. It was cool. I liked the concept. Little stories. A Batgirl story, a Red Hood story.
I'd have been pissed if I bought a season pass for that rubbish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That just... That's a danger. The season pass discussion is a whole another topic. I don't know. I just... DLC shouldn't have been mentioned out to the public until after the initial game's out. I get that it's already in development. They're already talking about it. They're already planning it. That's all cool. But hearing about it before a game comes out just leaves it just doesn't hit me the right way.
The problem that it has right now is the industry is shaping that way and it's not going away.
No.
Like there was a while there that we thought it maybe would be quieting down, but no. There's money to be made there, so it's going to stay. Yeah. Simple as that.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I'm really glad... Remember there was for a while there were the online passes? In order to play the game online, you had to pay $10, whatever it was. Right.
When you already got like PlayStation Plus and whatever. Yeah.
And that
was, that's another rant that, for me
that,
as
that
well.
That was to them to counteract used copies.
That's another thing. This is just totally not what we're talking about. But when you need to log into another account, even though you already logged into an account, for example, Uplay. It's like, I want to play Far Cry Primal on my PS4. I'm already logged into PlayStation Plus, signed in, all good. But then it logs you into a Uplay account. But fuck off! Fuck off! Don't have just infuriates me. But I don't know. I hope Destiny 2, the base game, is phenomenal.
I think they'd be smart and at least they'd be smart and they wouldn't have it come out as trash. But but with Rise of Iron, with The Taken King, these DLCs have come relatively close to each other. So really, unless they've had a team from the whole time almost working on Destiny 2, I'm really concerned that it won't be the big thing everyone thinks it will be. Mind you, when I played it, it felt new, it felt good, but for you it felt like, you know, more of the
same. But I didn't jump into the story side of things either, so my opinion was very skewed. I guess it's just, I don't like the idea that some developers seem to have in their head is let's get the game out and we'll fix it with DLC later. Well,
I think more it will patch it out.
Patch it out. Final Fantasy 15, a prime example.
Yeah, let's. Oh, did not that story.
It was fucked when it. Yeah, they patched a whole chapter of the story because it was bad when it came out. I mean, it's been in development for 10 years and you didn't know this particular chapter was rubbish. Far out. What do you think? Are we moving into? Do we have any questions relevant to this?
I'm having a look. Okay, so what we did, so we're moving into the next section, which is from the players. We get your questions or your statements about what we're discussing. Now, this time, we actually told the people what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So we get a little bit of answer.
Yeah.
So we've got here from Brandon Mark, DLC is definitely not more important than the main game. DLC is the kind of thing that would get me playing more if a game I loved but finished. Arkham City had some cool DLC and Cold Heart, but it was way too short.
Okay. Well, that's the same thing. What's relevant now is Horizon Zero Dawn. I've platinumed that game. I loved that game. I haven't touched it for 4 months. But when the Frozen Wilds comes out, I'm straight back in. That's what DLC is meant to do. Now, it is very different in terms of a big, like an online persistent game, you know, like Destiny. But as far as base games go, DLC should be additive content, not fixing the initial game.
Yeah, and I don't think DLC fixes games. I think patches fix games. And they just happen to sort of coincide
roll it
with
all
each
in
other.
Together.
Yeah. Lee Stevenson says, bad example is Harley's Revenge for Arkham City. You only get to play as Harley. Yeah, you play as Robin.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. But it's called Harley's Revenge.
Yeah. Because it's all about, spoilers, at the end of Arkham City, the Joker's dead. And I think you have to, like, Robin's kidnapped or something, I think. And you have, like, Harley's all mourning and it's kind of nuts. It's a really cool game. A
lot of talk about Arkham.
Yeah.
The series.
Yeah, they're very hit and miss with the DLCs. Yeah. Very hit and miss.
Come on,
Rocksteady. Craig O'Flaherty, Craig the intern, says, first read DLC is dick, smiley face.
First what?
He misread DLC is dick.
Oh.
Paul James from Player 2 says, Oblivion's horse armor was a bad example.
Yeah.
But Borderlands and Witcher 3 DLC are the best kind. Borderlands, so much good DLC.
Yeah, and a lot of it. But a lot of people, Borderlands 2 was a great game, but a lot of people enjoy the DLC more than the base game. That's, you know, all up to you. But the prime thing is, Borderlands 2 was a good game by itself when it came out. It didn't need the DLC to be playable.
Here we go. Something that Lee's just taught me. The first paid DLC that started it all, and it was crap. The Cuss Pack for Redneck Rampage, a paid DLC to add swearing to the game, and that's all it did.
Sorry, what game?
Redneck Rampage.
What is that?
It's a PC game, I think.
Oh, God, come on, PC. It's PC's fault we're heading in this direction to fucking start with. Okay. Pay for mature language.
Good DLC. Rock Band. I have like 800 fucking songs as an example, right?
Man,
there.
They made a lot of money off you.
Yeah, they made so much money off me. Craig Hallam adds, The Division. Great game, but all the DLC was broken and unbalanced. That game released a DLC. Fuck, that's broken. Let's patch it.
Yeah.
Rather than releasing a DLC that just fucking worked.
Yeah. See, we loved The Division initially, but it was very hollow after spending a few hours with it.
Yeah, we kind of played it together, and then you kind of got ahead of me, and I was like, oh, get up now.
Yeah, then I stopped playing anyway.
That's true. Martin Boomer says, a good example is Gods and Kings DLC for Civilization V brought whole new game mechanics to the game that had some amazing new factions, and I would rate as the best DLC I have ever had. Nice. Like, get sex with it.
Well, that's, you know, and the prime example here is that all the people that are saying, you know, this DLC is rad, that DLC is rad, the base games are rad on their own. Whereas, you know, you don't, if you've got a shitty game, then no one's going to want to buy the DLC to start with.
That's true. His bad example is Black Ops 2 Evolution. In Australia, very few people bought the season pass / DLC, so there was very rarely a game on those maps. In addition, they charged way too much for the new maps.
Yeah, Call of Duty does that a lot.
Yeah. Or an example is now with Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered, game $60, variety map pack $15. It was 20. It was originally $15 when you first bought it.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
I think
it's littered with microtransactions.
Yeah, I think Jim Sterling did a Jim Cretion on that. Best and he just, that was one of the best ones I've ever watched. He annihilated them.
Here we go. Chris D. Conway.
Happy birthday, Chris.
Happy birthday, Chris, you beautiful bastard. Paid DLC isn't a problem unless you know it was part of the main game. Like, I remember was the fight. Remember with Soul Calibur, you had to buy the fighters, but all the data was on the disc, so you more or less paid to unlock them.
That's poo
shit.
That you is know
how many
so
times
poo.
I've got DLC and I've gone, all right, cool, yeah, I'll pay for it. And it's like 200 kilobytes.
Yeah,
like,
it was already on there, wasn't it?
I'm like, you motherfuckers. That is bad DLC.
Yeah, yeah. When it's on the disc already. And it was launched with the game. That's so fucked. It is so fucked.
But there are some games like Overwatch, as an example. They have microtransaction. They have what is referred to as DLC. However,
Overwatch is just cosmetic, though.
That's the point. But that's the thing. The cosmetic DLC is fine. You have the choice.
Yeah.
Like an example, you know, we'll use Arkham, right? If you want the full Arkham Knight story, you probably should play that those DLCs, whether they're good or bad or not. Mm. So you are somewhat missing out.
The reason that Overwatch, like, I get that it's cosmetic, so it's not a big deal. But the reason that Overwatch has got heaps of flack for their loot boxes is because it's all random. Mm. That's the thing, is that, you know, I play this character, I fucking love that skin, I can't buy it. I've just got to hope I randomly get it out of a loot box, which is going to make me want to buy more loot boxes, or hope that I save up enough coins, which are really hard to come by, and maybe in 6 months I'll be able to get it.
Mm.
It's the random aspect of it that a lot of people were like, that's fucked. Just let us pick the skin we want and we'll pay you $2 for it instead of opening 1,000 loot boxes to try to get this one item. You know, that's the thing. But yeah, cosmetic DLC, I don't give a fuck.
You just made the choice. Like, I'm like, I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah.
But like story DLC.
Yeah.
See, because like, if I really like the game, which my, I've not actually finished a game in a very fucking long time.
I think you finished one this year. Exactly. You haven't seen the credits roll this year in 2017.
I haven't finished one game. I don't know what it was.
Well, it couldn't be very good then. I don't believe
I play so many games, I wouldn't know.
I don't believe you finished it until you tell me what it is.
Whatever. I'll think about it and I'll be like, yeah, that was not it. anyway, speaking of money, these are the games that are coming out this week and coming to the players.
Armello Deluxe Edition PS4 Digital.
Australian made.
The dude looks like Scar from The Lion King if he stood on 2 feet.
Oh, dang.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Batman The Telltale Series Season 2 Episode 1 PS4 Digital. Black Hole Complete Edition PS4 Digital. Sexy. Comet Crash 2 The Cronkoid Wars.
No way they made a sequel.
PS4 Digital. Graceful Explosion Machine PS4 Digital. They look like flying dicks. Pew pew pew, pew, pew.
Oh, dude.
Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice PS4 Digital. Icy PS4 Digital. Lawbreakers PS4 Digital. Masquerada? Songs and Shadows, which, guess it, PS4 Digital. Mega Man Legacy Collection 2, PS4 Digital and Retail. Neon Drive, PS4 Digital. Neptune Flux, PSVR Digital. It doesn't tell you a lot about it on the thumbnail.
Very bland picture.
And Sign Mora EX, PS4 Digital. So
pretty quiet week,
Pretty quiet week. You know, you get the artwork for Batman Telltale Season 2 is really cool.
It's
the Joker's skull on the face on the gargoyle.
Because cool. That's spoilers. Apparently the Joker's the big thing at the end of it. Bums me out.
Yeah,
I liked that the story wasn't focused on the Joker. Yeah. But I'm keen that Comet Crash is getting a sequel. Because I spent so long with the original. I never played the original.
Was that the game you finished this year?
Fuck no.
Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice is probably the top pick for the week.
Yeah, because this is the same guys that made Devil May Cry.
I'll read the thing, yeah.
Is it Team Ninja?
From the makers of Heavenly Sword, Enslaved Odyssey to the West, and DMC, Devil May Cry, comes a warrior's brutal journey into the myth and madness. Created in collaboration with neuroscientists and people who experience psychosis, Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice will put you deep into the melancholic fury of Senua's shattered mind.
So that sounds rad.
It sounds fucking rad, and it sounds really... It's interesting. That'd be my pick for the week if I had to pick one.
Now, apparently, as of right, I think the studio has only showed like 20 minutes of gameplay or something.
Mm.
So people are kind of like, how long's this game? Like, why we've only seen 20 minutes of it?
Mm.
I think it's probably very, very narrative driven, so it makes sense why they have not.
Yeah, you know, we can show you 15 minutes of it, but out of context, it's going to be very underwhelming.
That's me being optimistic.
Yeah, no, I'd agree.
Now, because I don't have like a big love of Devil May Cry or Heavenly Sword, or like the Team Ninja's work doesn't resonate that well with me. Just, I'm like, curious. I'm curious to see what it comes out as.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah,
I might pick it up. But if I'm going to pick up any game in the next week, it might be The Witcher 3, because Gwent is doing it for me.
Is it part of the sale that's going around now, the winter sale?
No. Oh, it's not.
Did you look?
Yeah, I did.
See if you can get the complete collection.
Yeah, it's not on special.
Anywhere?
No.
JB's, eBay's?
No. Oh, wait. Because I think what'll be cool is if I go balls deep in Gwent, which I'm pretty balls deep in now anyway, but when I actually play The Witch, I'll be like, oh, so that's, you know, this card, oh, that's you, and this card's you, and oh, that's based off these creatures. And
See, that's why I'm keen to play Elder Scrolls Legends, because I know most of the creatures and shit. And that,
yeah, so. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I don't think I'll do that.
Anyway, Josh?
Oh, if you liked that conversation, you can find more every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. A little bit more conversation happens on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thepopculturist. The main conversation happens on our Facebook community page, facebook.com/groups/thepopculturist. But the behind the scenes conversation happens on our...
really, really like us.
Yeah, if you really, really like what we do and care about some dark and dirty conversation, jump into our Patreon page at patreon.com/thepopculturist. Check out the tiers there. There might be something there that interests you.
I'm Ryan Besson.
I'm Josh Wanders.
And that was for the players. Also, in the future, if you have questions, popculturist.com/questions, chuck them in throughout the week. We'll come and do it next time for the players.
Yeah. It'll be on our community page. Yeah. Bye.